Blog Talk Radio.
Mi chiamo Medinde Ojirafo Kwesi Radahem Pata Akan Neye Ojirada. That means, mi chiamo means greetings to all Afurakanu, Afuraikainu, meaning Africans, black people. Today is Ojirada. My name is Ojirafo Kwesi Radahem Pata Akan. Akwamuma in Amaruka Etifi Mu Ojirafo, meaning the Ojirafo of the Akwamu Nation in North America. So today, of course, we're dealing with Ojira, which means purification. Ojira, or purification, operationalizes Nanasom, Afurakani, Afuraikaitni, or African ancestral religion. So we're going to get into a lot of information today. We've posted a few documents in the chat room for those who are in the chat room. This is some of the information that we'll be going over. So check that out. We also have a couple of announcements. So first, August 9th, we will be in Philadelphia. We are have been invited. We've been honored to receive an invitation to speak at the Philadelphia Sankofa Festival. So that's August 9th. In Philadelphia. The information is on the website for that, so check the Guamukasa page, and I will put that link in the chat room right now. And for the people on the phone, that's Guamukasa, the ojirafo.com, Guamukasa, GUAMUKASA.html. And you can get all the updates for the various events that we will be participating in or hosting just continuously throughout the summer and beyond. So August 9th in Philadelphia, we also will be, we have a date for Las Vegas, August 16th. That is also on the website. And then there will be more dates coming up. As they come, we'll post them on the website. You can also check us out on our Ning site, afuraka-afuraikayat.ning.com. That is our social network that we own. There are hundreds of people on the network studying the same kind of information. You can create, join, you can create a profile, you know, post pictures, post videos, post links, get on the discussion forums. There are many discussions on various aspects of the culture. Nanasom, Amamre, Amaisesu, Afurakani, Afurakaitni, ancestral religion, culture, and nation building. We've had the site for a few years, so there are many, many thousands of discussions and posts and links and so forth. So you can get a great deal of information there. Of course, we update anytime anything is coming up, we update that social network immediately, as well as our website. And also we have the Akanfo Nanasom Ancient Authentic Akan Ancestral Religion Facebook group on Facebook, so you can deal with that as well. We are also on Google Plus as Ojirafo and Twitter as Ojirafo, so you can check that information out as well. Okay, I just got to send out a couple of messages. For those people who are in the chat room, if you want to ask a question during the discussion, you have to log in order to participate. So if you don't have an account with Blog Talk, you can create one very quickly, and you can get a username, and then you can log in and post your questions or comments. For people who are on the phone line, if you have a question and want to make a comment, then all you have to do is press number 1 so we can see that your hand is raised, and then we can address your question or comment. So so we posted a few of the documents, the Ani Daho Awareness book. We posted that link. Note on the origin of the name Nyame in ancient Kanit and Kemet, that article, we posted that. We'll get information from information from these different articles, so you can look through them as we're going through the information tonight. The Nyankumpon and the Nyankumton Ra and Ra-et article, we posted that as well. So those are the major ones. Now, we also have some information on Facebook. One of the notes that we have on Facebook, you can look at that as well, talking about Akom and Nkom, and we're going to talk about that first. But first, let me check, send one more message, and we'll get started. But if you have any questions, you can post them in the chat now, or if you have any questions from last week's, the information we dealt with last week on the 42 enunciations of Ma'ah and Ma'at, you can post those questions as well. I just want to make sure some people want to send this message out real quick on the Facebook page, just to make sure people know that we're up and running, and we'll get started. Also, the other announcement is, 2 days ago on Akwesida, on Sunday, we released 3 new softcover books, all on the same day. What they are, one of them is Enidaho, which means awareness. And what that particular book is, hold on 1 second. Okay. I just had to send that message. So what that particular book is, it's a compilation of different articles dealing with awareness that we have published, and we pulled them all together in one book. So it's on the website with regard to as an ebook, but we also have it in soft cover. Of course, we print our own, all of our books in-house, in color, on our own printer. So this is a soft cover version of the book. The different articles that comprise the book is note on the origin of the term Nganga Ur or Nga Ur. Some people have tried to say Nganga Ur, or what they think is Neg Ur is the origin of the term Negur or nigger, and they try to say that nigger or nigga means God and try to tie it back to ancient Kemet. And there are a number of people promoting that foolishness. So, of course, we had to go and actually give the etymological origin and roots of these terms to show it has absolutely nothing to do with the term Negro, Nigra, Nigger, Nigga at all. We also had a part two of that, the origin of the term God. And then the subtitle is Nganga Order. Nga Order is not Nigger part two. We go into detail about that information. The actual etymological and cosmological origin of the term God, which is actually a corruption of a title of Amen and Amenet, the great mother and the great father. So we go into detail about that. Some people have tried to, you know, give all kinds of foolish interpretations of the origin of the term God. So we clarify that and prove that conclusively. And it has nothing to do, of course, again, with the term nigger. Then the third article is Nehetsu Negus Nkoso. Some people have tried to use the term that's used in Ethiopia, Negus or Nagas, Ngas, which has to do with royalty and adornment and so forth, and tried to say that Negas is niggas, and therefore niggas is a divine royal title, which is purely nonsense. So we go into the etymological origin of that term, and we go into detail showing it etymologically, but also showing it cosmologically, because the cosmology, as we're going to see tonight, undergirds the origins of these terms. It births these terms in our languages, in our culture. And then, of course, we also have an excerpt from the article, the publication, in Yom Kippur, in Yom Kippur, Ra and Ra'at. Of course, in Yom Kippur and in Yom Kippur are the male and female creator and creatress. That's their title in the Akan tradition. It's the exact same as Ra and Ra'at. Yom Kippur or Nan Kippur is the great pong, circular pong serpent, Nanka or Nyanka. And Yom Kippur is the arched pong serpent, Nyanka, when we're talking about Ra and Ra'at, the great arched or circular serpents that swallow their tails, the creator and creatress of the world. So one of the titles of Ra in ancient Kemet, in the Book of the Cow of Heaven, is Ra-Ak or Ra-Ku. So Ra-Ak or Ra-Ka became Ra-Ka or Da-Ka. Later, Na-Ka in our Khan culture is Nanka or Edanga. Edanga or Nanka in India becomes Nanka or Naga, but that comes from Ra-Ka. This is where the term Naga comes from. It comes from a title of Ra. Ra or Ra-Aka. Ra-Ka, Da-Ka, Nanka, and so forth. It has absolutely nothing to do with the term nigger, and nigger is not divine. Or Naga, so people saying we're Nagas, we're the rise of the Nagas, that's nonsense. It has nothing to do with the term nigger. It's not some ancient sacred word that we're trying to reclaim and tap into our Kundalini energy. It has nothing to do with that at all. So we also go into detail in the origin of the term God. We go into etymological detail about the origin of the term Negro, Necro, Nigger, Nigga, all of that. And it traces actually back to the term in Kemet, Neka, which means foes or enemies who are crushed to death. So if you refer to yourself as Nigga, Naga, and so forth, yes, it is a pejorative term. Yes, it's a term that has to do with enemies that are crushed to death. So if you're a nigger, if that's what you want to call yourself, you're identifying yourself as an enemy, a degenerate, crushed to death like powder. So that's all it means. So anybody using that terminology, that's what you're calling yourself. A lot of people have floated misinformation, pseudo-scholars, as well as other people who just, you know, pick up information on the Internet. They've repeated this nonsense. Some of them name their organizations like that, wear T-shirts and so forth, propagating misinformation and a false identity. So the Enidaho book is a compilation of those four publications all in one volume. And, of course, it's in color and so forth. And we released that. The second book that we released on Sunday, Akwesida, is Kokobon, which means warning. And it's the four publications that we have published all in one volume dealing with the reality that this sexuality or homosexuality was never accepted in ancient Kemet, Kanit, Nubia, or Afuraka, Afuraka in Africa, period. Of course, the whites and their offspring promote the idea that this sexuality, and we use the term this sexuality because when you say this, it means not. So sexuality is not in play unless you're dealing with a male and a female. Outside of that, sexuality is not occurring. So we use the term this sexuality because it's more appropriate and more descriptive, more accurate as a term. But the whites and their offspring, of course, attempt to force the false notion that this sexuality or homosexuality was accepted in ancient Kemet, was part of the culture and part of the culture of ancient Afuraka, Afurakai, not because they actually believe that. All of the white scholars, writers, publishers, and so forth, they all know that that's 100% absolutely false. But, of course, they are liars. They are spirits of disorder. That's their nature. That's their ill nature. Their goal is to corrupt the culture, the idea about the cultures, so that our people will not want to embrace our ancestral culture. If the first thing our people think about when they think about Kemet or Kanit, Nubia, Egypt and Nubia, our ancestral culture, and they shouldn't be separating it from our cultures all across the continent, but, of course, the whites now spring first try to separate ancient Kemet from the rest of Afuraka, Afurakai, and then try to, you know, add these perverse notions to it. If the first thing we think about when we hear the term Kemet is, oh, they were engaged in dissexuality, homosexuality, we won't want to have anything to do with it, and we'll reject it. And when we reject our own culture, what's left for us to accept? The dominant white perverse culture, which controls our minds in a destructive fashion, of course. And when your mind is controlled, your thoughts are controlled, then your intentions are controlled negatively, and then your actions are a reflection of controlled thoughts and intentions that are negative and self-destructive. As long as they can keep us away from our ancestral culture, then they will keep us away from communicating with our ancestresses and ancestors and listening to them. They'll keep us away from listening to the Abosom, the Orisha, the Vodou, the forces in nature that actually undergird order and embody order in creation. When we align with the forces in nature, what we're doing is aligning with the order in creation. It's like when your body, the cells in your body live in harmony with the order that governs it, then they're living harmoniously. And when disorder arises, manifests itself within that order, then the cells, organs, organ systems participate in the destruction of those disordered cancerous type cells. So when you embrace order by harmonizing with the forces in nature, then you know what order is and you know what disorder is. You know who the promoters of order are, propagators of order, embodiments of order are, and you know the purveyors of disorder, the whites and their offspring, as well as Negroes in the community who work on behalf of the whites and their offspring. So when you embrace culture, embrace the deities, you're embracing order. You embrace your ancestresses and ancestors, you're embracing the kind of guidance that will lead us to wage war against the whites and their offspring instead of accepting their culture. As long as we reject our ancestral culture, we reject wisdom or intelligence. The expansive pole of intelligence or Nyansa is revolution, and the contractive pole of intelligence is resolution. So revolution and resolution are two halves of the divine whole, which is Nyansa, wisdom. The whites and their offspring understand that. It's not about just getting information and sounding intelligent. When you embrace wisdom, that means you revolt, you return. Volve means to turn, revolve or revolt, to turn back, and solve means to loose or free, to resolve a situation. When you revolt and resolve or engage in revolution and resolution, you return things to the state that they should have been in. You go back to the origin, go back to the root, go back to when things were orderly. You revolt against the current situation, and you do that so that you can resolve the issue. You can restore balance where imbalance has occurred. When you go back to the origins, to the root of things, through revolution, that's the expansive expression of wisdom. And then when you use that information you have gathered through revolt or revolution, reaching back, and you take that information you have received and gathered and use it to bring balance to a situation and get rid of the disorder, you engaged in resolution. You brought resolution to an issue. That's the contractive or impressive whole of wisdom. So revolution and resolution are two halves of a whole wisdom. Most people don't think about revolution and resolution having to do with divine wisdom, but that's all divine wisdom is. The governor of the expansive pole of wisdom is Tehuti. The governess of the contractive pole of wisdom is Tekit or Seshat, the great divine female Abosom divinity of wisdom, the wife of Tehuti. They govern wisdom, which means they govern revolution and resolution. So the whites and their offspring, of course, want to have us to have nothing to do with that. They don't want us to connect with our culture. They don't want us to engage the divinities of wisdom, because therefore we will begin to embrace revolution and resolution and see, of course, the wisdom in it and what it is. So therefore they have to separate us from the culture. As long as they can separate us from the culture, we engage in self-destructive activity, behavior, thoughts, intentions, and actions, and they maintain their rule. So the way they separate us from the culture is to promote misinformation about the culture. They know one of the number one things that will keep us from any culture is if they introduce the idea of dissexuality, homosexuality, because they know that is against our nature. They know that is exactly who they are. That's how they came into being. Sexual deviance, perversity, degeneracy, that's their nature. Filth and so forth. Disorder, that's their nature. They want to place that on our culture. So many of our people have embraced that nonsense because we've been conditioned to listen to the whites and their offspring. We believe that they tell the truth. Of course, we've been taught to follow a fictional white character named Jesus who never existed, a fictional white character named Allah and Yahweh and Buddha and every other pseudo character. We've been conditioned to believe when the whites and their offspring speak, write, or teach, they must be telling the truth, which, of course, they're not. So when we embrace that nonsense, we reject the culture. And there are people right now who know nothing about ancient Kemet, but if you bring up the term Kemet or Egypt, the first thing they'll say is, well, they were involved in homosexuality. Why would you want to deal with them? So this is why we have to put this information out. Of course, the agents of the whites and their offspring, Hebrew groups, Muslims, Moors, and others, they take the false information of the whites and their offspring and try to place that perversity on ancient Kemet as well, because they are simply agents of the whites and their offspring. That's always been the case. All of their organizations were founded by the whites and their offspring and black agents of the whites and their offspring. And their teachers are agents of the whites and their offspring. Many of their followers are just misguided individuals who latched on to some false information because they trusted somebody who told them something. But the teachers in these organizations, all of them, are agents of the whites and their offspring. This is why many of them have jumped on this angle that this sexuality or homosexuality was accepted in ancient Kemet. They all know that it was not. They're all clear on that. But they're lying about it because they're trying to increase their numbers and decrease the number of people who would be embracing ancestral religion. As an agent of the whites and their offspring, your job is to pull black people away from our own culture and make them slaves to the pseudo-religions, false religions, and so forth. So this is what they do. What they weren't expecting to encounter was actual information that totally destroyed what they have been promoting, what they've been teaching, because they never came up against that kind of resistance in the past. We've had individuals who are quote-unquote Afrocentric scholars, teachers, lecturers, authors, and so forth. When it came to this issue of dissexuality, homosexuality, they looked at these texts, they listened to what the white Egyptologists said, they studied the Medutu, like the white Egyptologists, how they taught them to, and they came to the conclusion by listening to the whites and their offspring that this must be true, but then they're embarrassed about it, so then they sweep it under the rug. They'll just give a one-liner and say, well, it really didn't mean that, and there's different interpretations, or they'll say, well, that was just pure symbolism, and it really meant something different, or they'll say something like, well, that's for the priesthood, and other people can't understand, these sacred internal principles, and if you don't understand that, then you can't really understand the culture. It's pure nonsense. What they're really saying is, we don't understand it. We believe the whites and their offspring. We're embarrassed by it, so we're going to try to sweep it under the rug and say, well, maybe it did exist, but let's look at something else, because they did not have the information. So what we did is publish information. We have four articles in this particular volume. The Divine Prohibition Against Dissexuality, Homosexuality in Ancient Kemet, where we show in the Runu Pert Nimheru, specifically when you go before the 42 different Abosom, the deities, the 42 annunciations of Maat, as we went through last week, you're actually going before 42 different divinities and invoking each one ritually, harmonizing with each one ritually, just like throughout the course of your life, you will go to a shrine of a deity in Orisha and Abosom of Vodou and invoke them ritually. Then you go to another shrine of a deity and invoke them ritually and harmonize with them ritually and communicate with them ritually. After the death state, you still engage the same process, the same divinities you invoked when you were alive, you invoked in the after world, in the spirit realm. And when you show that you can harmonize with them because when you say, I have not done this, I have not done that, the only reason you can harmonize with these forces in nature in the afterworld is because you harmonize with them when you were alive in the physical world. And your capacity, ability to harmonize with them one by one in the spirit realm is a demonstration of the fact that you didn't have that disorder in you, and therefore you were able to harmonize with them. You were attractive to them like a magnet, as opposed to being repelled by them because you were engaged in disorder. And, of course, one of the divinities, Kererti, when you go before Kererti, you show, I have not copulated with a copulator engaged in this sexual activity. And what that shows is two things. Number one, you didn't engage in that because the deities hate that. It's all these different things that you say you have not engaged in, the 42 so-called negative confessions or enunciations of Ma'at, not only are you saying you did not engage in that, but you're also saying, of course, you didn't engage in various things that the divinities hate, that are divinely prohibited, divinely hated, taboo, where there's murder, theft, dissexuality, all these different things. It's also saying not only you do this in the afterworld, but you also do it in the physical world. It's also saying that because these divinities are demonstrating that this activity is divinely prohibited or hated by the divinities, that if that thought ever came into your mind, it's not coming from the deities because they hate those kinds of activity. It's not coming from the ancestresses and ancestors because they hate that kind of activity. It's not coming from your own ka or ka'et, your soul, divine consciousness, because your soul, your ka, your ka'et is a deity, and therefore it repels or repulses perverse activity. So if the thought ever came into your mind, you know immediately it must be coming from a discarnate entity who's a spirit of disorder, because your spirit and the deities that you are born with would never accept that behavior. So it shows with the various things that we say we have not done as a representation of showing what we have done and have not done, is also showing that if those things ever come into your sphere of awareness, you automatically know, wait a minute, y'all both of them hate that, so where is this coming from? It must be a discarnate entity or some conditioning that came from somebody else who was trying to force perversity on the culture, and all I have to do is reject that, recognize it's coming from the enemy, or if it's a discarnate spirit, the reason we smudge areas, use incense to smudge areas, people put salt around the, you know, baseboards and things like that to repel discarnate spirits, because we know the effect that they can have on the consciousness of people when they whisper in the ears of people and so forth. They're easily repelled, however, but they're no different than a transient, a homeless person trying to harass people when they walk by them. You can easily repel them. And spirits like that, individuals like that die and their spirits are still hanging around, they will harass people, but you can easily repel them. You just need to know that they actually exist. And so when you have an unusual thought coming to your sphere of awareness, you know it's not your own ka, because the deities hate those perverse activities. You know it's coming from a discarnate entity, and you can easily repel them. That's one of the reasons we have that. So we go into detail about that. In that article, we also have the instructions of Ptah Hetep, the proper translation of instruction number 35, the prepubescent sexual taboo. Some of our authors in our own community mistranslate that text. They don't understand it has to do with not having sexual intercourse with a prepubescent female. That's what the text is talking about. The whites and their offspring tried to say it had to do with an effeminate male. So there was a prohibition against having, you know, sexual intercourse with a effeminate male, therefore saying that, well, that there were effeminate males in ancient Kemet and people did that, but sometimes, you know, you shouldn't do it. That's pure nonsense. We show in detail and we translate the text properly and we give the cosmological basis foundation for it, including examples in other cultures in Afuraka, Afrakai, to prove what's being taught, what's being shown, what's being demonstrated. So we have that as well. Okay, so hold on. And we also, the next one on there, and I did not post that one in the, I'm going to post it right now. I didn't post it in the chat. So it's the call ball. And call again means warning, so I just posted that up in the chat. Let me make sure it's the right thing. The other article in that piece is Set and Anat, the dating of the contendings of Heru and Set. This sexuality, homosexuality, was never accepted in Kemet. So we show, again, in that text, some people try to use that text as evidence that there was this sexuality happening amongst the deities in ancient Kemet, so therefore we're worshiping deities that are engaged in this sexuality. We, number one, prove that text was influenced by the whites and their offspring, and the proof is actually in the text. Because when you look inside the text, and they talk about Heru and Set, and who's going to be the ruler, and once the Abosom, a goddess Neith, declares that Heru should be the next ruler to succeed his father Asar, and Set should not be the ruler. But then she also says to Ra, the creator, basically as a constellation, you can double Set's inheritance and ask Ra, the creator, to give Set his two daughters, Ra's two daughters, Anat and Astarte, as wives, sort of as like a quote-unquote consolation prize. Instead of getting the kingship, which Heru is going to receive, at least Set can receive the two daughters of Ra, Anat and Astarte. That's in the text. The key is that Anat and Astarte are foreign deities. They're quote-unquote Asiatic deities. Meaning, if they were already considered daughters of Ra during the time that the text was compiled, that means that the Asiatic influence was so entrenched at that point in that region in ancient Kemet that the Asiatic foreign deities had already been incorporated in the cosmology as daughters of Ra. The same text where the so-called bisexuality shows up is the same text when the whites and their offspring show up. Then we go even further to show not only is the text still a repudiation of homosexuality, bisexuality, but we also show that they changed the roles of the deity. Originally, it was not about Set trying to engage in a bisexual relationship with Heru. Originally, it was Set attacking and trying to rape the seed goddess, and they took the role of the seed goddess out, and then they stuck Heru in the same role and retold the story. Of course, these are influences from the whites and their offspring. So we go into detail to prove that. And then, of course, the last article in that compilation is Neith, Khnum, and Khnum-Hetep, the two identical twins that the whites and their offspring try to show, say, are bisexual. In reality, they are identical twins with wives and children. And we show the only reason they're standing connected. We show the actual term Hata, which means twins, in ancient Kemet, in the Medusu, in the hieroglyphics. When you show the twins, just the word twin, hata, which in Akan culture, by the way, the term ata, or ata and ata is a male and female term for twin. Hata, it comes from hata in ancient Kemet, which means twins. The Medusu that make up the word twins is the symbol for the letter H, the symbol for the letter T, the symbol for the letter R, and then a determinative symbol where you have two people standing close together holding hands. And that represents the Hatar, the twins, because they were conjoined in the womb. And that's why they show the two people at the same height standing together, close together, holding hands, because that's what the twins were in the womb. That's how they came into the world. So when they show Neon Khnum and Khnum-Hetep, the two twins, they show them together very close, holding hands, and even their name, they're named after the deity Khnum or Khnumwimbu, who's actually a patron deity of twins. He's a conjoiner because he conjoins the soul and the body of the person in the womb, but he also conjoins the twins in the womb. So it's a cosmological underpinning of that whole piece. So we prove conclusively that these are identical twins. We show the cosmology, we show the etymology and so forth in that document. So those four documents comprise the new softcover book, Kokol Ba, which means warning. That's one book. Then we have the previous book we said, Eni Daho, which means awareness, the origin of the term Nganga'ur, which is not nigger, the origin of the term God, the origin of the term Negus, Negesu, the origin of the term Naga, and so forth. And we also go into the actual origin of the term Negro, Negra, Nigger, Nigga, and all that nonsense to prove that that's not a sacred term. So those are the first two books, and then the third book is in soft cover now for the first time because of popular demand is More Means Dead. So that publication that originally was just a PDF book, now it exists in soft cover. And we added an additional appendix, a new appendix that did not appear in the original publication. The publication has been out for about a year and a half. There have been over at least 40 plus thousand downloads of it that we've seen, and then of course other people have shared it, so that of course exponentially increases the reach of the article. But we added a new appendix, and now of course it's available as a soft cover. Of course, it goes into detail about the term Moor. Moor, of course, is a term that the whites and their offspring began to use as a pejorative, a negative term, a denigrating term to label black people. It's a term that's rooted in the language of ancient Kemet, Mer. It became corrupted into Moor by the whites and their offspring, and it designates if somebody's living, they're the socially dead. They're slaves, bondsmen, servants, vassals, and so forth. Spiritually, when they make their transition, they're the spiritually dead, meaning the damned. So whether they're in the spirit realm, they're the damned group of people in the spirit realm, the Mer, the Moor, the Meru, plural. In the physical world, they're the socially dead. They're the slaves, the servants, the vassals, the bondsmen, those who are wretched, afflicted, and so forth. Sickly, infirm, weak, feeble, wretched, afflicted, and all of that. We show all of the details about that. We show the cosmology that supports it. We also show the same terms in the Akan language, meaning the exact same thing, referencing the same kinds of groups of people. Mere, just like you have Mer in Kemet, meaning the sick, infirm, feeble, weak, and so forth. Mere in Akan means exactly the same thing, and it designates that group of people. Whites and offspring knew it was a pejorative term that we applied to slaves and the spiritually damned deceased, so they decided to label all of us that term as a pejorative, and now Negroes are walking around calling themselves Moors as though that's something to be proud of. It's foolishness. So we smash all of that in the article. And we were the first to give that detail, especially with regard to the cosmology and the etymology, to prove that. So these three books are now available in soft cover, in addition to the other 7 soft cover books we have. So we have 10. We're going to give you the link to that right now. Ojirapo.com/Nhoma, NHOMA.html. It's the Nhoma link on our website. You can download all 10 books directly from that link. You can get that information there. And, of course, all of the PDF versions of all of our books, all now 15 books, we only have 10 of them out in soft cover right now. We're going to get the others in soft cover soon. But all 15 are free PDF downloads, ebook downloads. All of our other articles, over 60 articles, are free downloads. All of our 49 videos, most of about 2 hours or more each, are all free downloads. All of the audio, free downloads. But the soft cover versions we do sell. They range between $8 and $11. So we give away the books for free online, but the soft cover versions we sell because we print them ourselves in color, so that's an expense, but we also use that to cover our expenses. So if you support the work that we're doing, and if you value the work that we're doing, please go to the Nhoma page and make a purchase. You can also make a donation if you like. But even if you make a $15 donation or more, we're going to send you a book anyway. That will help us with our expenses. When we go to different events and teach, when we do presentations in the various cities that we've gone to and that we are going to, we do not charge organizers a speaker's fee, and we do not charge attendees to our events and admissions fee to come in. It's always free for our community to come and learn. And we don't charge a speaker's fee to the organizers. So, therefore, we need to cover expenses, and your purchase of our soft cover books allows us to, as well as donations, but allows us to, you know, continue to give free products and services to the community. We also have the Akuma Tra, Akuma Sa, and Akuma Dine, dealing with substance abuse abstinence, ritual methods to overcome substance abuse abstinence, ritual methods to overcome domestic abuse issues, suffering and drawing those kind of negative individuals back into your life to overcome that trauma. And then, of course, we have the transcarnational trauma, recovery alignment, so Akuma Tra. So we have those services, divination services as well. So all of those things are free as well. When we assist people with overcoming substance abuse abstinence ritually, of course, we don't charge people for that, and we don't charge people for any of our services. So only revenue we generate is when we publish those soft cover books in color and ship them out to people. So if you support the work that we're doing, we appreciate it. Yet I say purchase some soft cover books. And when you share them with people, your family members, co-workers, and so forth, as soon as they see those full-color books, they're sold immediately. They're very interested. They're very intrigued and so forth. Okay, so those were just some quick announcements we wanted to get that through because we worked very hard to get those three new publications out on Sunday. We've spent a great deal of time putting that information together, even just over the past year and a half, publishing those documents and then compiling them and listening to what the community wanted. There's cultural warfare going on. You have the whites and offspring, of course, but you also have Negroes who are jumping on the bandwagon of the whites and offspring, trying to crush ancestral religion. But what they never came in contact with was real information that smashes everything that they're saying. And this is what we're putting out, and we're leading the way on that. Okay, so let's get into this information dealing with Ra and Ra'at the Creator and Creatress, our grandchildren of Amen and Amenet, the great mother and great father, the supreme being. There's a difference between the Creator and Creatress and the supreme being, which is the great father and the great mother. It's the wife and offspring who conflate the Creator, and usually they just say Creator and God, and conflate the two. Never been true. And all Afurakani, Afurakaiti people know that, have known that for thousands of years. It's never been an issue. The whites and their offspring promote the foolish notion, the infantile, ignorant notion of monotheism for political purposes. They created that foolish notion because they wanted to get rid of the idea that there were different deities because they didn't want us listening to the actual forces in creation. Because when we attune with them, they direct us to exterminate the whites and offspring and not submit to them. So if they can promote the idea that there are no deities except for one, and the one that exists, they are the representatives of, so you have to go through them to get to the one fictional deity, then they can control the population. That's the purpose of monotheism. It's never been true. It's not intelligent. It's not a higher order of thinking or cosmology. It's actually coming from the lowest, most ignorant level imaginable. People who have no capacity, which the whites and offspring have no capacity to connect with the actual forces in nature, they cannot do that. They can attune to the supreme being, the great mother and the great father. They can attune to the creator and creatress. They cannot attune to the forces in nature or the ancestresses and ancestors of our people because they don't have any honorable ancestresses and ancestors within their group. So they can't do that. When we say the whites and offspring, we mean all non-black people. White Europeans, Americans, Asians, Hindus, white Hispanics, pseudo-Native Americans, Arabs, and so forth. All non-Afurakani, non-Afurakaiti people are the whites and offspring. They have no capacity to attune with the divine order and creation because they don't have a Ka or Kayat, and we go into detail about that in one of our books, the Okra Complex. So they promote that false idea for political purposes, for purposes of control, the idea of monotheism. We're going to get into the Abosom, which is the Akan term for deities, but the Abosom, the deities of Kemenu, the eight divinities of Kemenu, which the whites and offspring call Hermopolis. That's the founding cosmology, and if they're not separate cosmologies in ancient Kemet, all of the stories and cosmologies are all united and dealing with different phases of the coming into being of the universe and of the world, and us as a people, and so forth. So, but before we get into that, let's just say, and we put this as a note, we noted this on Facebook, when we're talking about ancestral religion and talking about ancient Kemet and Kani, ancient Egypt and Nubia, and just ancestral religion across the board, anywhere in Afuraka, Afurakai, Africa, if people are not engaged and embracing the ancestral religion, meaning Akom, the terms Akom and Nkom in the Akan language, Akom means possession, spirit possession. Nkom means spiritual communication. So different forms of communication, possession and communication. You can communicate by communicating directly with the divinities, them speaking to you, showing themselves to you, various forms of communication. One of the other forms of communication is possession itself, spirit possession. The divinity gets inside of your body and moves through you and communicates with the community through your physical vessel. So Akom and Nkom, spirit possession, spirit communication. If you are not engaged in one of these processes, one or both of these processes, practicing ancestral religion, then you cannot understand the culture of ancient Kemet. The religion animates the culture, and that's true of Afurakani, Afurakani people, period. The culture of ancient Kemet was not a bunch of pseudo scientific empiricists who just sat around making observations and creating a culture based on some observations. Observations came afterward. We harmonized with the Abosom, the forces in nature, the Orisha, the Vodou, the embodiments of order in creation, the spirits that regulate order in the created universe. We harmonize with them. We learn of order by fusing with the forces that embody order. Therefore, we get to know and have an intimate relationship with the order in creation. And therefore, we can replicate that when we establish villages, establish shrines, establish cities, establish systems of governance and jurisprudence, all forms of nation building. We replicate that by first fusing with the actual forces in nature. When you look at creation as an orderly creation, the movement of the earth, the movement of the stars and so forth, the change of the seasons, the rise and fall of the tides, the manifestation of sunlight and daytime and nighttime, everything else, the revolution of the earth, everything. You see an order in creation, plant life, animal life, mineral life, and Afurakani, Afurakaiti, human life. The order in creation is a reflection of the spirits that undergird creation. Just like your spirit animates your physical body, there are spirits that animate the Earth Mother, spirits that animate the ocean, spirits that animate the rivers, spirits that animate the atmosphere, spirits that animate the sun, the various stars, planets, the black substance of space, and so forth. These spiritual forces are the underpinning of the order that is manifest in creation. It is because of their movement and their interaction harmoniously that you have a harmonious interaction physically in the world. When we attune with them spiritually, we get in harmony with them. Now we're in the flow of order. We experience order. We have an experiential, you know, relationship. And then we can take that order that we have actually infused within ourselves and replicate it when we establish systems of activity, government, agriculture, healing practices, engineering, everything. This is where our culture comes from. It is animated by communicating with the deity. Just like we talked about last week with regard to writing, people who are engaged in ancestral religion understand that when an ancestral spirit will possess or a deity possesses, sometimes they will direct you or they will grab something to write or they'll grab a stick and draw symbols in the soil or in the sand. So they'll motion to you to get something and they'll take it and write it down. This is how we learned how to write symbols, the medutu, the hieroglyphic symbols. When they say Tehuti taught the symbolism, the writing is Seshat taught writing to our people, that's a literal piece. Just like when the Orisha possess somebody today and speak, or the Abosom possess somebody today and speak, and operate and move and heal people and touch and lay hands and so forth, people who engage in religion know they will take a pen or take a stick and write symbols and tell us to remember those symbols and use these for specific reasons. And that's how we encoded these symbols into our practice. So when you engage in ancestral religion, you know that. The same is true just across the board with the culture. So if you understand that, and every black person, the vast majority of black people, have the capacity innately to communicate with the Abosom, the Orisha, the Vodou, and so forth. You don't have to be a priest or a priestess to deal with that. The Abosom come into the world with you. The Orisha are assigned to you pre-incarnation by the Supreme Being. So you are born into the world assigned to certain forces in creation that communicate with you and your family members, and you communicate with them. Sometimes you don't consciously understand that some of the thoughts, directions, urges, mandates, admonitions that you are feeling and experiencing are actually coming from the abosom that were assigned to you and have been with you throughout your life. So all apurakani, apurakani, of course, you're a criminal or murderer or something like that, something crazy. But the vast majority of our people who are not engaged in that kind of perversity, we don't repel, not engaged in that kind of disorder. So therefore, we have the capacity to communicate with the forces in nature. It doesn't mean that you're perfect and you have to live, you know what I'm saying, you're in perfect harmony. That's part of your growing and development process. We don't achieve that perfection until we become, achieve the office of Nana, as we call in our Kaan culture, a spiritually cultivated elder or elderly. Until you get to that point, of course, you will make mistakes, but the more mature you become, the less mistakes you make. But the capacity to embrace and live in harmony with the abosom and communicate with them, and they communicate with us, that's inherent, that's innate, that's intrinsic, that's inborn, and if we come into the world with it, that's why children can do that. They communicate with children just as adults. So when we engage this process, then we can understand who the divinities are, but we also understand cosmology. If you do not engage that ritual process, then you cannot understand cosmology. The best you can do is become an investigative reporter. You can report what other people have said about the culture and about the cosmology, but you don't understand the cosmology. Hold on one second. Somebody said their audio dropped out. Okay. Can anybody hear me now? Let me know. If you don't hear, what? Hold on one second. Let me send a message and let me know if you can hear. I'm going to type something in the chat. Let's see if it's still going on. And if three people say the audio dropped out. Okay, this is what I'm going to do. A couple of people are saying no. What I'm going to do is I'm going to have to hang up and call back in. If something happened with Blog Talk. So for the people on the phone, this is what we're going to do. It looks like I'm going to have to hang up and call right back. And then what you're going to have to do is, of course, you might have to call back in. So let's see. Let me just make sure one more time. Oh, no, now they're saying they can hear me. Okay, can everybody in the chat room hear me? Send me a message real quick. Okay, nobody can hear now. So I see two people. Now, one person said they can hear. All right, so now it's going in and out. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hang up the phone and I'm going to call right back. The people who are online, you might still be able to stay online. If you get knocked out, just call right back. In fact, if people refresh the default player and see if that works, just let us know if that works first before we go forward, before I hang up and call back, if you can refresh the default player. And if somebody on the phone line, just if you hit number one, raise your hand and let me know if you can hear. I just want to make sure. Okay, so I see a couple of people raise their hand. So you all can hear. Okay, people on the phone can hear. And the people online are saying it's no sound. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to hang up and then I'm going to call right back and then we'll see what happens. All right. Okay. Okay. So is it so can the people hear now? Let me know. And if you're on the phone, can you raise your hand and let me know? There's some people who hit number one to raise their hand and let me know if you can hear. Okay, so I got one person who said, okay, you all said it's back. One person on the chat said it's back. Can other people let me know, hit me up in the chat to let me know if the sound came back on. And then we'll get it going. And some people might have to refresh their browser or refresh their default player. And we're going to, because I see the people on the phone can hear it. So some people are calling back. Okay, because I don't know exactly what's going on with it. So we tried to call in and call back. So what we're going to do, you might have to sign out, sign in, refresh your browser. In the worst case scenario, we'll just we'll go through the information, and then people might have to listen once it records, in the archive. The people who are in the chat room, you might have to do it that way. But I see that the people on the phone are saying that they can hear. So it's something going on with the chat room in Blog Talk right now. Okay, you got it? All right. So let's get into this. Let's get into the information dealing with the Yabosom, the deities of Kemenu, which is what the Nile Spring call Hermopolis, which is a sacred city, a region of ancient Kemet. Now, we're talking about the origin of creation, the creation of the universe. And we were talking about Amen and Amenet, the great mother, the great father, and the great mother. First, I want to read something from the Leyden Papyrus talking about Amen, and we also have a couple of links dealing with that within the article. Actually, the link you'll find, Anidaho, the book Awareness. We have that, some of those links as well. One of them, this is talking about Amen. It's in the so-called Leyden Papyrus, and it's talking about the nature of Amen. Find that particular piece. Hold on one second. Okay, so one of them it says, you did exist first in the forms of the eight deities, quote-unquote, of Hermopolis, meaning Kemenu, and then you did complete them and become one, becoming unique. It also, another passage from the Leyden Papyrus talking about Amen says, Amen came into being in primeval time. None knows the form in which he appeared. No deity existed before him. There was no deity with him to declare his form. He had no mother for whom his name was made. He had no father who begot him, saying, it is even myself. He shaped his own egg, the divine divinity, becoming of himself. All of the deities were created after he came into being. Now, we're also going to read from, that was from the so-called Leyden Papyrus dealing with Amen. Now we're also going to read from a section from the Temple of Heb, which was a temple in the later period in Kemet. Temple of Heb, which the White Nile Spring called Hybis, columns 23 to 24, and this is in one of the new books we just released, The Origin of the Term God, in that particular section in the Anidaho book. It says, your ancient throne is the Ka-et, the Ka-et of Kemenu, meaning the highland of Kemenu. It is from the lake of the two knives that you reach land. It is from the water surface that you appear in the hidden egg, Amenet being with you. So we look at those two together. It's talking about Amen. The first one talking about Amen came into being in primeval time. There was no other deity who knew or could tell him how he came into being because he had no mother and had no father. Meaning like parents can tell a child what happened when they were born, what they were doing, how they came into being. That text was saying there was no other deity that was there to tell him how he came into being because he had no mother and had no father. It doesn't mean no other deity was with him, because in the other text we just said is from the water surface that you appear in the hidden egg, Amenet being with you. So it was Amen and Amenet together in the beginning. They have no mother and father because they are the great hidden divine being, the great mother and the great father. It also says that the deities, no other deities existed prior to that. All of the other divinities came into being after Amen and Amenet. So now let's deal with the eight, or the so-called Agdawad, or the eight divinities of Kemenu. Kemenu, Kemen, in ancient Kemet, means eight. So this is why they named that region of Kemet the city of the eight, talking about the eight primordial divinity. It was later called that. Of course, before we started using that name, it didn't have that name. That's why it says in the text, your ancient throne is the Ka'et, or the Ka or Ka'et in Kemenu, the region that's called Kemenu today. Of course, that is the same Ka or Ka'et mentioned in the Runu Pert Imheru, or the Book of the Coming Forth by Day, misnomer Book of the Dead, when Ra is talking about the creation of the world, and he's referred to as creating the world on the high land, the Ka, the Ka'et, within Kemenu, at the creation of the earth's first landmass. And it says, Afarakai, he exists upon the high land. Afarakai, of course, is Afraka, Afuraka, Africa. And we go, in our book, Afuraka, Afraka, the origin of the term Africa, we prove that. So this same Ka, Et, Ka, and Ka'et that they're talking about in this text is the same Ka and Ka'et that makes up the portion of the name Afuraka, Afurai, Ka'et. Now, and it's in the region of Kemenu, simply that's a descriptive title because this is the region of the eight primordial divinity. So let's get into the cosmology, and we're going to show how Amen, Amenet, Ra, and Riot are different and who these eight divinities are. Amen, the root. Men means stable, permanent, and abiding. Amen also means hidden. So Amen and Amenet are the great hidden being, the great, stable, permanent, and abiding being. That same definition, the definitions you will find in the language of the Akan language. So Amen and Amenet, meaning the great hidden ones, the great, stable, permanent, and abiding being that is the infrastructure that undergirds all of the created universe. So they're first, they exist as male and female. If you look at the earliest texts in Kemet, the earliest religious compositions, which are the Meru texts, the pyramid texts, you will find Amen and Amenet together. There was never a time when there was just Amen. There was never a time when there was just Amenet. There's always been the balance of the male and the female. And that cuts across all Afurakani, Afurakani cultures from ancient times to today. That's a reality. It's the white male offspring who promotes the false idea of male superiority, or the white lesbians promoting female superiority and mother goddesses without the male, or the males promoting father gods without the female. That's the white male and female dissexual, homosexual corruption of the reality of culture and cosmology, because they don't have the capacity to align with that. So you have Amen and Amenet. In the text, the origin of the term God, we talk about the titles of Amen and Amenet as Ganga Ur, Ganga Urit. Ganga means to cackle, cackler. That's also the title of the goose and the gander, because they're the great cacklers. And the sacred Achinebwa, or animal totem, for Amen and Amenet, one of the sacred animal totems for them, is the goose and the gander. And they're shown as the great goose and the great gander at the beginning of creation. When geese mate and they come together, the male and female come together, they begin to cackle. And the male has a louder cackle and the female has a softer cackle. They start cackling, releasing those sound vibrations. And when they do so, then that's part of the mating process. So they show Amen and Amenet as the great cackler, the great cacklerette, the great Ganga, Ganga Ur, Ganga Uri. Ur means great, so the great Ganga, the great cackler, great Gangaet. And of course, we show etymologically that Ganga, or Ga, is where they get Ga from in the Proto-Indo-European language family, which Ga becomes later God and so forth. And that comes directly from the title Ganga Ford from Ancient Kemet for Amen. He's the great Ganga, the great god. Amenet is the great Gangaet, or great goddess, as the cackler. Now, when they come together and release sound vibration, the great hidden being, male and female, they release sound vibrations by cackling, by ga-ga, literally releasing that sound, those sound vibrations pour out of them. This is why the term ga also represents a vessel in Kemet, and also means to pour. So ga means to release sound vibrations, to invoke, meaning to call, but it also means to pour. That's why in the Proto-Indo-European language, quote-unquote family, ga means to pour, ga means to invoke. And this is why they said these are the terms that are the root of the term God, even though they didn't understand why. When Amen and Amenet release that, those sound vibrations that pour or stream out of them, then they're releasing energetic vibrations that will cause the beginnings of creation to happen. The first thing that takes place is the manifestation of the black substance of space. Now, the black substance of space is a plasma. So physicists call it dark energy and dark matter, and it makes up over 99% of the universe. We've always understood that substance to be animated by the divinities Ka and Kaet, the male and female divinities of soul, divine consciousness, the divine consciousness of the supreme being. Just like you are a being, you can employ your consciousness, as we say, to generate thoughts, ideas, forms in the blackness of your mind. You can have your eyes closed, you can be asleep in a dark room, and you can generate luminous images in your mind, whether you're dreaming or if you're in meditation or just daydreaming or thinking. There's darkness when you close your eyes, but you can generate luminous images that other people can't see, but you can generate those images. That luminous material you're using, you're utilizing energy in some capacity. You have the capacity to generate geometric forms, colorful images, and so forth. You have the capacity to shut that down. You are utilizing, you're directing your ka to generate images. You can also direct your ka to shut those images down. You can employ your consciousness to generate forms, thought forms. You can employ your consciousness to not do that. You can do that right now. The reason you have that capacity is because Amen and Amenet created that capacity. They created ka and kaet and direct them, generate forms in the black substance, generate luminous images, generates the forms of things that will later come into being. So they created these forces in nature, these expansive and contractive forces in creation, physically that manifest as the black substance of space, that all-pervasive substance that can take any form. That black substance can take any form, just like water can take any form. It's not limited to anything. Well, that black substance can take any form, and all forms are contained within it. So if you're going to create a universe, you have to create a substance and an energy that has the capacity to take any form imaginable. It can't be limited. This is why Ka and Kaet, the consciousness, soul of Amen and Amenet, were created as entities that can create any form imaginable. And we often use the analogy of water in a pot that you're going to boil. At first, it's formless. It's, of course, clear, quote-unquote, invisible, but it's clear. It's formless, and it's moving, but eventually it takes form. So Amen and Amenet, through the Ganga or Kaka process, generate Ka and Kaet. They give birth to Ka and Kaet, the capacity to generate form. And they are birthed in the universe as the black substance of space. Now, the next two divinities are called Hehu and Hehut, also Huhu and Huhut. In ancient Kemet, the term He means breath. It can also mean fire or heat. It also means that which is boundless, eternal, infinite, and so forth. All of those things are united cosmologically. Hehu or Huhu in Kemet, you'll find the same terminology in Akan, hu or hu-hu means breath. It can mean a soft breath, but it can also mean a blast. It can also mean heat and so forth, expansion and contraction. So first, amen, amenet creates ka and kaet, because amen and amenet are hidden, the invisible or hidden being. They create ka and kaet that manifests as the black substance of space, has the capacity to take on any form possible. Then they create hehu and hehu, the expansion and contraction, the vitality that will give birth to later vitality within us. The breathing process is hu-hu, hu-hu, breathing in and out. Your breathing process is expansive, it's boundless, it's eternal, it never stops whether you're awoke or you're asleep. It's constantly moving, constantly expanding and contracting. So if you're going to have a created universe, first you have to have the capacity to create any kind of form imaginable. Once those forms exist, they have to be given vitality, life, existence. You can have a form, just like you can have, you know, a dead body, but it has to be given life or vitality, quote-unquote breath. So ka and kaet create the form. Hehu and hehu give life or vitality to the form. So this is how they come into being. The next two divinities that are created are Nun and Nunet, or Nu and Nut, sometimes it's spelled. When you look at the Medutu and how it's spelled, it's a wavy line, also the urns, the vases that carry water, but the Nun and Nunet, the wavy line that represents the letter N, of course the English letter N is just a truncated version of that wavy electromagnetic line that you see in ancient Kemet for Nun and Nunet. This is the primordial energy, the power to move, the energetic capacity that exists within all created entities. So you can have forms, the capacity to create forms, you can give them life or vitality, but they have to have the power to actually be able to function in creation. So therefore, you can have somebody who's paralyzed. They have a form, they have life, their vitality, they're aware, they're conscious, but they don't have the power to move. So if you're going to have living entities, they have forms given by ka and kaet. They have expansion and contraction, breath, continuous breath, boundless breath, eternal breath, the capacity to exist and live and continue and be vital. But then they also need power or energy, the capacity to move. They have to have the kind of energy that they can draw on in order to function in creation. So Nun and Nunet are the male and female expansive and contractive aspects of the primordial energy, the power to move. This is why the term nunu in Akan means to stir. It also means to move. It's the same term in Akan that you'll find in ancient Kemet, nun, nunet. That vibratory frequency is a replication of the divinity. These deities, we do not name the divinity. We don't give them names and anthropomorphize them and so forth. These are actual forces in nature that we invoke on a daily basis that communicate directly with us. We learn the names of these divinities, these abosom, from the abosom themselves. And their names emanate from them as they move through creation. When you have a stable primordial energy, and you attune to it, you can hear that energy, and when you replicate it with your vocal cords, it makes the sound nun and nunet, or nunna, that nunu energy, that vibrational frequency, that is the energy as nun and nunet operate in creation. If you attune to them spiritually, you will hear those vibrations, just like you can have a car idling, and you can hear it humming. When you say hum, that's not just an English word. What you're actually doing is replicating the sound that you hear. You hear the sound, it sounds like a humming, so you say hmm, because you're hearing exactly and you're trying to replicate the exact sound that that entity is giving off. When Nun and Nunet, when these two forces move through creation, the vibrational frequencies that emanate from them, that are emitted from them, are nun and nunet, or nunu. And when we hear them as they move through creation, we can repeat the sounds that they make, and that's their actual name. The same with huhu and huhua. When they move through creation and expand and contract in creation, just like you can take a rope and swing it around like a lasso in the air, it makes a whistling sound. You can replicate that whistling sound because you can hear it and you can replicate it. When huhu and huhua, or hehu and hehu, move through creation, when they expand and contract within the black substance of space, the sound that they give off when they're moving like that is huhu and huhua, and that's their actual name. And the same is true for ka and kaet, deriving from amen and aminet, first releasing the sound vibrations, ga, ga. Just like we played in the previous session, we played the recording of the geese cackling, and it sounds like they're saying ga, ga, when they release those sound vibrations. The first sound vibrations made by amen and aminet, that explosive, those explosive sound vibrations, was the ga, ga, the explosion of energy and expansion of energy. Those are the sounds they made, and that's the energy that's wrapped up in those two divinities, ka and kaet. So if you use the analogy of a pot of water, it's invisible, it's not moving, and so forth, it's just there, but it has the capacity to take on all forms. Just like the black substance of space has the capacity to take all forms. It's formless, but it is a substance. It's not nothing, it's an actual substance. When you add heat to the water, first it begins to expand and contract. There's expansion and contraction within it. That's the hehu, hehu, or huhu, huhu. Again, hehu means heat, it means fire, it also means boundlessness, it also means breath, expansion and contraction, warm breath, vitality, and so forth. So that the water begins to move, hehu and hehu. So first the water is created by the enunciation, or the ganga, or the cackling of amen and aminet, that great black substance, or that clear substance of water, comes into being, a formless substance that can take on any form. Then they create hehu and hehu, and they move throughout that water. It begins to expand and contract. There's vitality in the water, and now it has the vitality to take various forms. Then they create nun and nunet. That expansion and contraction becomes more rapid, and the water begins to wave in the pot. So you see waves of energy moving back and forth in the pot. Now those waves can carry energy from one side of the pot to the other. Hehu and hehu give birth to nun and nunet, the wave energy in the black substance. And now it's a wavy energy that can carry energy from one part of the black substance to the other. The nun and nunet begin to vibrate very rapidly. And instead of nun, 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 which is not only the sound, but the wave energy going up, down, up, down, up, down. And when you repeat that or replicate that with your vocal cords, the tongue tapping the roof of the mouth once, nun, nu, or nun, that vibrational frequency, and you repeat it, nun, 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 and you continue to repeat it and becomes very rapid, then it becomes the same as the rolling R, which is the tongue tapping the roof of the mouth once. So nun, 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 nun becomes rrr, that rolling energy. The wave energy becomes a rolling spherical energy. The same thing happens in the pot when you add heat, hehu, hehu, breath, heat, fire, then the waves come in the pot. That's the nun and nunet, the wave energy. But then they begin to wave so rapidly that they begin to form spheres of heat, fire, which rise up out the pot. Then those spheres rise up from the nun and nunet. The nun and nunet, the nun, 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 and nunet give birth to the ra and riot energy. The vibrational frequency of nun, the rapid N becomes a rolling R. And ra and riot. Ra is the R part, is the energy, the rapid energy, and then the ah portion is the most expansive sound you can make. That's the widest open you can make your mouth. That's the most expansive sound you can make is ah. And when you close your mouth, ooh, it's more contractive. When you open your mouth, it's ah, it's the most expansive imaginable. That's a replication of the energy of Ra and Ra'et, Ra and Ra'et moving through creation. When they move through creation, when this spirit, these spirit forces move through creation, that rapid energy, that rumbling energy, you can attune to it and you can hear it, just like something moving and whistling past your ear. The energy of Ra and Ra'et, when they move through creation, expand and contract in creation, that rumbling, rolling energy you can hear, and that expansive ah energy you can hear. That's why Ra and Ra'et, or Ra'et, have those names. Those are the sound waves they actually make, those sounds that emanate from them as they move. And when we listen to them, we can hear those same sound vibrations. We repeat them, and we say Ra and Ra'et. When we attune to Nun and Nunet and hear their energy, it's like you can take a stethoscope and put it on the heart of somebody. You can hear the heart beating. If you replicate that sound, you can repeat that sound. If you listen to their breathing pattern, you can hear the hehu, hehu in them, and you can replicate that sound. Anything moving past you, you can hear that sound vibration, and you can replicate that sound. When the spirits of nature move, when Nun, because of the nature of their functioning, the way they move, that slow-moving primordial energy, they give off the sound vibrations, Nun and Nunet. When Ra and Ra'et move, they give off the sound vibrations, Ra and Ra'et. That is why they have these names. That has to be their names, because those are the sound vibrations they give off. So we don't name the divinity. In the text, when they say that Ra rises up from Nu, just like the spears of fire, meaning the bubbles, rise up out of the waving energy of the pot. The Nun energy of the pot give birth to the Ra energy. The Nunet energy in the pot give birth to the Ra, Ra'et energy. When they say Ra's father is Nu, that is literal. When they say Ra'et's mother is Nunet, that's literal. The wave energy rumbles rapidly to the point where it creates spheres, and those spheres rise up. Just like the fire and light rose up out of the darkness and exploded out of the darkness as fire and light, Nun and Nunet is the energy in the darkness, the primordial energy. When they become very rapid and unite, Nun and Nunet unite, male and female unite, they give birth not to wave energy, but sphere. That wavy cobra that represents Ra and Ra'et encircles around itself and becomes a sphere. So the wave energy of the snake becomes a circular snake that swallows its own tail, or becomes a circular serpent and becomes a sphere of energy, and becomes the fire and light that bursts forth from the blackness, and that's the first light in the universe. And then they move throughout the black substance of space, expanding and contracting, creating black spheres, carving out black spheres with their light. Those black spheres get penetrated with energy. They become the stars, and then stars give birth to planets, and the planets, of course, develop as Ra and Ra'et move through the planets, and that gives birth the plant life, animal life, mineral life, and of course, Afurakani, human life. So what we wanted to show there is that Amen and Amenet are primordial. They are the great father and great mother. They create Ka and Ka'et. They create Hehu and Hehu. They create Nun and Nunet. And then Nun and Nunet give birth to the spiraling, fiery energy that bursts forth from the blackness, within the blackness, that is Ra and Ra'et, who are the grandchildren of Amen and Amenet. If you look in your body as an Afurakani male or an Afurakani female, you are a great being. People can't see your spirit typically, or your consciousness, because it's quote-unquote hidden. As a male, you're like Amen. Your being is hidden. As a female, you're Amenet. Your being is hidden. They can see your physical body, but they can't see your spirit, so to speak. You have within yourself the capacity for consciousness. You can think, you can form ideas, you can direct, you can come up with new things that never existed before. You have a Ka, if you're a male, you have a Ka'et, and you direct your Ka and Ka'et to fashion ideas, or you may direct them to stop fashioning ideas. It's up to you, but you have that capacity as a great being. You can direct your brain or direct your Ka and Ka'et to create ideas or forms or not. You also are living, you're vital, you're expanding and contracting all the while that you're doing this. This is your breath, your hehu and hehut, your expansion and contraction, your vitality. You have energy in your body, but it's at an inert. It exists, but you may not, when you're at rest, that doesn't mean you don't have any energy flowing through you. It's just not active. But when you decide to activate it and fire yourself up, you start breathing in heavy. If somebody's running and they're taking a lot more oxygen, that hehu and hehut begins to move rapidly, expanding and contracting. You're bringing heat or fire to the nun, nunet, that primordial energy within you, and then it gives birth to firepower within you, and then you can lift weights, run, fight, and do whatever. You can direct your life force energy to your procreative organs to create a child. You as Amen, you as Amenet can direct your energy. You can use your Ka and Kaya to direct your energy to procreate. You can also use that energy directed to your arms and legs to lift something or whatever you want to do. So Amen and Amenet direct Ra and Raya, that life force energy, to create and act and move and do for them. Ra and Ra'et as creator and creatress are subordinate to and servants of Amen and Amenet. So let me see. I saw a couple of questions. People were in and out. And somebody said, like a hekau. Hekau meaning basically words of power, chants, incantations, ritual, sound vibrations. Yes, so that's exactly, in fact, the word hekau, the second part, kau or ka, comes from the title ka. That's exactly what it is. So, and it's not, in our languages, it's not just, you know, some, like in Hinduism and foolishness like that, you know, words of power and mantras and so forth. The languages of Apura Ka, Apura Kai, our tonal languages, our ancient languages are tonal, meaning different tones yield different meanings. For example, in the Akan language, the term papa is a term they use for father, that the low, high tone, papa, but the high, low, papa, means good. And then pa-pa means to pat. So the only difference is the tonality. Papa, low, high, means father. Papa, high, low, means good. Pa-pa, straight means to pat. You also have oba, meaning low, high. Oba means he opens. Oba, high, low, means a female, a woman. And then oba means a child or offspring. So oba, 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 those are three different words that change in tones or vibration or frequencies, yield different meanings, yield different values. Different tones or sound vibrations, collections of sound vibrations, are different values. The value is based on the waves and rates of the vibration. So that yields value. And that value is what we use to determine worth. So because our languages are tonal and they yield different meanings based on value, then all of the words in Afurakani, Afurakaitni languages have mantric value. So it's not just one word, ong is a mantra, and another word, hung is a mantra. In our languages, all of the words have mantric value. It's not just one or two. This is what happens when the whites and offspring steal culture, attempt to, and try to refashion culture, and they come up with ideas like this is a mantra. Well, all of our names are mantric, all of them. So that's just one piece. So when you talked about the hekau, we want to clarify that because that term has been misused, just saying, translated as magic sometimes or mantras in other situations and so forth. All right, so I just want to make sure there was not another question. Okay, and if anybody has any questions, you can place them on the chat, in the chat room. If anybody has a question on the phone line, just raise your hand by hitting number one. And I see a couple of hands up. I'm not sure if you had raised your hand earlier because you were just making sure we could hear. So So let me go to the phone line real quick just to check. Okay, Michiawo, you're on with Ojira Po. You had a question or a comment? Okay, just listening. Okay. And just wanted to make sure, Michiawo, were you just listening or did you have a question or a comment? 7054.
Well, earlier I was letting you know that I could hear you, but now I got a question. My question is, I always sometimes think that these words are interchangeable, but I see how you use it in reference to Ra and Ra-et and the Ka and Ka-et as one being spirit and one being soul. What is the difference between the spirit and the soul?
Okay, good question. So, and one thing, we do the link for, just so people know, we link the article, Nyonkompon, Nyonkonton, Ra and Ra-et, where we're showing the deities in Nyonkompon and Nyonkonton in our Khan culture are Ra and Ra-et, Inkamet, and Da, and Aidakwedo, and Vodun, and Odumare, and Oshumare, Yoruba, and so forth. So the difference is we're talking about, they'll say spirit and soul in English, the Ba and the Ka in ancient Kemet, female Bayet and Kayet or Bat and Kat. The spirit is the divine living energy that animates us. The Ka is the soul or the divine consciousness. So your living vital energy that animates you and makes you alive and well and functional and you're able to go out and do things and operate, that's the life force energy animating your body right now. It's very and the consciousness is your soul, your capacity to generate ideas, formulate ideas, and so forth. Physiologically, if you look at the brain is the seat of the Ka. It's the divine consciousness. Your Ka, male, or Ka'et, female, is your spirit's brain. So just like you have a physical body, and then you have a smaller body in your physical body in the head region, which regulates all the functions of the physical body, which is your brain, you have a spirit body, which is called the Tsum Tsum in Akan, the Sahu and Kemet. That's the spirit body. Within that spirit body, in the head region, is a smaller body, which is the soul, which is the Ka, male and Ka'et, female, called Okra and Okrawa and Akan, and Ori Inu in the Yoruba tradition, and Selido and Vodun. It is the spirit's brain. It regulates order within the body. It has encoded within it what your function in the world is, how you are to execute that function, what kind of energy complexes you have, and how you are to utilize those energy complexes without creating disorder in the process. So encoded within the brain, those four major divisions of the spirit brain, which in Akan is the Nkra, Nkrabia, She, and Shebia. If you look at the four major divisions of the brain, you have the cerebral cortex with the right and left hemispheres and the cerebellum with the right and left hemispheres. That corresponds to the spirit's brain, which is the Ka, the Okra. That's your consciousness. It's actually a divinity. It's a deity that dwells within your head region that directs you on how to live in harmony with divine order. That's the soul, the divine consciousness. Divine consciousness and soul is the same concept. It's a deity that's assigned to us by the Supreme Being. You can feel that force in your head region pulling you in certain directions when you're going against what you should be doing. And your goal is to harmonize your thoughts, intentions, and actions with the pull of that force. That force in your head is actually a deity. Your Ka is actually a deity. It's a miniature divinity dwelling within your head region. It's a messenger of the Supreme Being to you that dwells with you and lives with you throughout your life. And when you make your transition, it goes to Inyamewa, Inyamewa, Amenet, and Amen, and reports on how you functioned in the world. So it is a divinity. And it's your divine consciousness directs you on how you should function, what's in harmony with order, what's not in harmony with order. It's like the spirit's brain. But just like you have a physical brain, you also have blood that circulates all throughout the body, and within the blood is the oxygen. And when you have oxygen circulating through your blood, it permeates all the organs, the cells, and, of course, the brain. And when the union of the oxygen-carrying blood floods the brain, that's the union of the oxygen and the brain, of course, they work together. Spiritually, that life force energy, your Ba, your Ba'et, that allows you to connect with the energy in creation that's animating your blood and your cells and everything else. When it connects with the Ka, that's the union of the Ba and the Ka, the animating energy, the divine living energy, and the divine consciousness united together. So the Ba is the spirit, the Ka is the soul. The Ba is governed by Ra and Ra'et, the divine living energy that animates your being, and then the soul is governed by the great Ka and Ka'et, the black substance of space. A portion of that black substance of space out there is in your body as melanin, the chemical that gives us our color, and it crests in the neuromelanin in the brain. So we have that black substance. When we were just a zygote, our cell was, little cell was, you know, body was full of that black substance, and it stretched out and crests up in the brain in the neuromelanin region. But just like the universe is a black substance and the sun, moon, and stars and planets float within that black substance, we, our bodies are that black substance, and our organs, which are the planets and so forth, float within that black substance. So that's the difference between the two. The black substance, Ka and Ka'et, out there is the same Ka and Ka'et within us that crests within the brain, and then the fire energy that moves through the black substance of space that created the suns and the planets and the stars and everything, Ra and Ra'et, that same Ra and Ra'et force moves through us, and that's our Ba.
Does that make perfect sense?
And we, for people, if you want some more details on that, there's two places, actually three places. Three of the, one book, Cuckoo Tun Tun, The Ancestral Jurisdiction. Of course, that's on the website, on my page, and different places on the website. We talk about the Ba and the Ka. In the articles talking about Ra and Ra'et, Nyon Kumpon and Nyon Kuntong, we go into detail about the functioning of Ra and Ra'et and who they are. And then the book, The Okra, Okra Complex, The Soul of Akanfo, we talk about the Ka and Ka'et, the nature of the Ka and Ka'et, our function in creation, so-called destiny, but our function, and how to cleanse the Ka and live in harmony with that and so forth. Okay. So we appreciate the call.
All right.
Okay. And I just wanted to check on the chat room right quick. Okay, so you said, what is the self-awareness then? People are still aware. Are people still aware after losing the Ka? What exactly is self-awareness? Okay, so now we're going to answer it two ways. We're going to give you two related answers. So you're an entity. So before, when you make your, when somebody makes their transition, when they die, or the spirit leaves the body, they go the ancestral realm, but it, at some point, their Ka goes before Nyame Wa Nyame, Amenet Amen, reports on what the person has done. You'll see the symbolism of the weighing of the heart in ancient Kemet, where the person's heart is weighed against the feather of Ma'at. If their heart is light, meaning that it's not weighed down by disorder, anxiety, criminal activity, you know, that negativity, that negative magnetism, gravity that, you know, keeps them down because they're weighted down by nonsense. If it's light, then it balances out the feather, and then they can move into the ancestral realm in harmony. If not, then those are the kind of spirits who remain earthbound, hanging around, haunting houses and causing people a bunch of problems. Hanging out on the bridges where they jumped off the bridge and committed suicide, hanging out the spots where they got shot or died or whatever and just causing people problems. But, so you're a spirit, in the spirit realm, your Kra separates, goes to Inyame Wa Inyame and reports on what you have done. In fact, the term Kra or Ka means soul, Kemet. It also means Kra means soul in Akan. Ka means to speak in Kemet. Ka means to speak in Akan. Ka means message in Kemet. Ka or Kra means message in Akan. So the soul, Ka, is also one who speaks. Ka is also one who brings a message, Ka. Because the Ka goes and speaks to Nyamewa, Nyamewa, Amenet, Amen, and shares the kind of energy that you come into the spirit realm with. Now, before you reincarnate, say you're somebody who did well, you lived in harmony on earth, then you go to the ancestral realm and you live with your ancestresses and ancestors for generations. At some point, generations down the line, you're going to reincarnate through your descendants. Before somebody comes into the world, they go before Inyamewa Inyame. They're assigned a specific function to execute in the world, just like every cell in your body has a specific function to execute. We're given a function. That's what destiny really is. It's encoded within the crop. So that deity is assigned to your head, just like you're given a brain, quote-unquote, your spirit body is given a spiritual brain, a ka-et. It's assigned to you. Now you're a spirit body, a sum-sum. You have a life energy within you, the ba, and you've been assigned a ka. Now you're a ba and a ka. You're a whole entity. Ba and a ka united. Now you can be sent back into the spirit realm to await incarnation. At some point you're sucked into a womb, one of your descendants, and then you're born. So say people who are operating throughout life, you feel that pull in the head, you know that's a divinity. You know that's your crop. You as an individual have awareness, your own awareness as a spirit, as a human being, but then you're assigned a divinity that gives you, how are you to function? What are your specific functions and what's the best way for you to carry out those functions without creating disorder in yourself in the process? That force that teaches you that and guides you like that is your cry, your okrawa. If you engage in disordered activity, lust and foolishness, and the okra separates from you, now you're an individual without a deity guiding you, now you can succumb to all kinds of disorder. You're repelling that. As a human being with a spirit body, you have awareness of having a spirit body and you're existing and interacting with other individuals, but you don't have that divine consciousness who can show you how every thought, intention, and action that you have can be harmonized with divine order. That's the difference. When you have a kra, it's guidance. It's a deity, it's an elder. It's an elderess that dwells within your head region. It's one of the divinities. Just like people have Orisha, Abosom, the Okra is one of the Orisha. It's one of the Abosom. So somebody says Oshun governs their head, that's an Orisha that governs them, but they also have an Ori, an Okra, as we call it, Nakan Ori in Yoruba, that guides them. Your Okra is the number one divinity that guides you. The other Orisha, Abosom, will give you some assistance based on what your Okra is telling you to do. They don't step in the way of the Okra and just tell you what to do. They listen to what your Okra is telling you to do, and then they give you the kind of energy that supports what your Okra is telling you to do. They just assist. They don't replace your Okra. Your Okra is at the apex. It's the apex of the pyramid, and the deities, they give you the power to execute what your Okra is telling you to execute. Your ancestors and ancestors give you the kind of guidance on how to execute what your Okra is telling you to execute based on your genetic makeup, based on your history, based on, for example, in our family, we're allergic to these kinds of foods because of the things we've been through in different parts of the continent we lived on. We can't eat these foods or we're going to get sick, whereas other people can. Your ancestors and ancestors can tell you what the taboos are for your family, whereas other people can't tell you that. So the deities give you energy to execute your function. The ancestral spirits give you guidance on how to use that energy to execute your function without creating disorder in the process based on your genetic makeup. But they only give you the energy and the guidance based on what your Okra is telling you to do. They only follow what your Okra is telling you to do. So other Orisha, other Abosom, other Vodou, they only give you guidance based on what your central divinity, which is your Kra, which is your key divinity that leads you, they follow its lead. So just like you have two parents, you may have aunts and uncles who will give you some guidance, but they're not going to give you any guidance outside of what your parents, they'll say, well, what did your parents say? And you'll say, well, my parents told me to do this. And then they'll say, okay, well, that's what you need to do. Well, this is how you can do it in an effective way. That's what the deities do. They only go by what your Okra tells you to do. But if your Okra separates from you because you're engaged in disorder, you have awareness, but you don't have divine awareness. you don't have the kind of insight that allows you to say, okay, is this thought, is this action going to lead to disorder? Why is it going to lead to disorder? And so forth. You're just drawn by lust, desires, conditioning, and so forth. Now, part of the, so when we talk, I think somebody asked a question about, okay, you talked about riot. So when we talk about the whites and offspring, for example, the reason they're different from us is because they engage in perverse behavior. A certain group of black people, just like a certain group of your cells, become cancerous and become start consuming the other cells. A small group of our people became cancerous, and those are the ones who separated from us, who were forced to separate from us. Those are the ones who repelled their own crop, and once that spiritual head separated, that great divine force of blackness, of course, then eventually the physical blackness left. Those are the ones who got caught up in northern Eurasia, but it was because of their behavior, living out of harmony with divine order, that they lost their crop, repelled their crop. Your cry is a divinity, so it won't dwell in disorder. You engage in rape and murder and dissexuality, it will leave you. Now you are an individual without an outcry. You're a deity, I mean a spirit without a divinity governing you. The only thing you have left to make decisions is your own conditionings, lusts, desires, misguided desires, and so forth. You don't know how to sanction those desires. You have awareness, but you can be aware of being engaged in criminal activity. But you don't know how to categorize those thoughts, intentions, and actions to see if they're in harmony with order. And you may not want to. You may have repelled your crop because you don't want to live in harmony with divine order, so now you're just a disordered entity, just like a cancerous cell. And the second part is, of course, within the crop is what is, the ka is called the aku. In ancient Kemet, they'll say Aku means illuminated, shining ones. That's the title for the ancestors and ancestors. Aku means intelligence or illumination. That is a spiritual force. Physically, its seat is the pineal gland, which some people will say the third eye and so forth, the light-sensitive gland. When the light hits the pineal gland, and this is why Aku or Aku means illuminated one and so forth, when light hits the pineal gland, it causes it to secrete hormones, whether it's serotonin or melatonin, whatever. It's a light-sensitive gland. The reception of light stimulates it. That light becomes information and it stimulates it. Spiritually, just like you have a physical pineal gland, you have a spiritual pineal gland. You have a physical brain. You have a spiritual brain, which is the ka. The physical pineal gland, the spiritual pineal gland is the aku. So the ka gives you your specific function in creation. The aku, or that illumination, gives you the details about how that's related to your thoughts, activities, intentions, and actions, why something is in harmony with order, why something is not in harmony with order. So your ka will direct you, this is what you need to do. You need to heal. You need to use these kind of plants to heal, use this kind of energy to heal and bring balance to certain situations. It is through the aku that you learn, okay, why does this heal like this? How is this related to another plant? How is this related to another animal? How is this related to another human being? How do I avoid getting out of harmony with order? What will happen if I did this as opposed to doing that? All those different things. The aku, or that spiritual pineal gland, allows you to get the details about the interconnections between things, the laws that govern things, how to learn that. The pineal gland is the abode of the divinity Tehuti, male, Tekit, or Seshat, female, the goddess of divine wisdom, the deity of male god of divine wisdom, or the Ntoro, male and female divinity of divine wisdom. So that's all. So just like you have the physical structure, you have the spiritual structure. You have the physical brain that regulates order in the body. You have the spirit brain, which is the ka, that regulates order in the body. You have the physical pineal gland that, once it receives light, illumination, information, is stimulated and it secretes hormones, directions. You have the spiritual aku, or spiritual pineal gland, that once you receive light or orders from the okra, the brain, then it gives direction. It secretes, quote-unquote, spiritual hormones, the directives for action. It gives the laws that tie things together and why things are happening, why things are not, and so forth. Another question, why is there so little documentation on Ra'et? Did the whites destroy it? There is documentation on her. We have images of her in the articles and so forth, whatever images we can find. There are more and more images of Ra'et coming out. Like 10 years ago or 15 years ago, you could hardly find an image anywhere of Ra'et anywhere on the internet. But more and more people are starting to post images, especially our people. It's not that the images don't exist. It's because the whites in our spring decided with a monotheistic mindset that they're not going to focus on any of the goddesses. They're just going to focus on the deities. So they'll focus writing, and they'll just, when they take pictures, they'll take a picture of Amen. Amen is right there. Amenet is right there next to him. They just won't show her because to them, she's not important. They'll take a picture of Ra, and they'll see Ra'et right there, and they just won't include her in the picture because she's not important. They're promoting the idea of male superiority, white male patriarchy, and so forth, and monotheism, and all that kind of nonsense. Of course, they don't want us connecting with the actual creatress. There's Amen, sometimes called Amen-Ra, which is just a title. Then Amenet, she's also called Amenet Ra'et, which is a title added to her name. And, of course, they are the grandparents of Ra and Ra'et. So when we embrace our culture fully, we invoke them on a daily basis. We communicate with them. They show themselves to us. They possess. They communicate through divination. These are divinities. They never stop being divinities. Just because the whites in our spring don't show them, of course, doesn't mean that we should not deal with them. The same is true, by the way, of which we mentioned last week. Ma'al and Ma'at. Ma'al is the divinity, the male force in nature. We invoke Ma'al on a daily basis. You can include Ma'al and Ma'at in your libation. These are forces in nature. People focus on Ma'at because the whites and their offspring focus on Ma'at. So you have quote-unquote Afrocentric people talking about Ma'at all day long, but they never mention the deity Ma'al, which makes them imbalanced. Because if you're invoking even just the name Ma'at all the time, but you don't even realize that that's actually a divinity, which you can find in the so-called Nesi Amsu papyrus, talking about the creation of the world, the Book of Knowing, the evolutions or manifestations of Ra, and overthrowing Atep. In the first section, when he talks about, I came into being, and there, before I had a place I could stand, I laid a foundation in Ma'at. It literally says, I laid a foundation in Ma'at. Not in Ma'at. It's the male divinity they're talking about in that particular text. You can also find Ma'at, the male divinity, in the 11th hour of the night in the Shat Imduat, the book of what is in the underworld. So the divinity exists. So when people always talk about the creator and the gods and the ancestors and don't use creatress, the goddesses and the ancestresses, then they just cut themselves off from half of creation, and they're still engaged in the insane notion of white supremacy and don't even realize it. The same is true when they don't even mention the reality that the supreme being, Amen, Amenet, Inyamewa, Lisa and Mawu, Chukwu and Komosu, Olorun and Olokun in reality, Kolotiolo and Katieleo in the Senufo tradition in West Africa, when they don't mention the male and female balance, that shows that they are not connecting with these divinities. They're repeating what other people told them, including people on the continent who are priests and priestesses who have been infected with Islam for the past 1,000 years, or infected with Christianity or Western culture, and they become pseudo-monotheists, or monotheism is creeping around in their, you know, expression or corrupt expression, infected expression of the culture. So they promote it as though it was our ancient culture. And there are people in the Yoruba tradition, Akan tradition, and Bodu and so forth, who are walking around promoting monotheism without even realizing that it's foolishness. demonstrating they're really not connecting with these forces in nature that they claim to be connecting with, or they have a limited connection because they're rejecting what the actual Habosom are actually saying. So before we, if people who want to stay on for a few minutes afterwards, and you have a little bit over 3 minutes to call in, because the live stream with regard to the on the chat room and everything else, the live stream will cut off in 3 minutes. If you want to continue to listen past 11 o'clock, then you would have to call in the call-in number, and you can listen on the phone, and you can, you know, ask questions on the phone as well. Call-in number is 657-383-0635, and you have a little bit less than 3 minutes to call in. Okay. So, So somebody placed information in there about different forms of the name Riot. And that's right. Sometimes you have to spell it different ways when you're Googling it, because sometimes they don't spell it, you know, correctly, or they use different variations. And you may find other pictures that, you know, images and text, depending on how you spell it and how it pops up in Google. For the people who came in late, and for the people who came in after we had, you know, after we had to call back in the chat room as well as on the phone, we mentioned at the beginning that a couple of days ago we released 3 new books in softcover. They are on the website, the Enidaho. It goes into detail about the origin of the term nigger, God, and so forth, and we compiled those various publications into one large volume. Also, Coco Ba, where we compiled the various publications we have proving that dissexuality, homosexuality, was never accepted in ancient Kemet. That's a soft cover all in one volume now. And then we also have More Means Dead by Popular Demand, a new appendix added to it as well. And it is in a volume now as a soft cover publication. So those 3 new publications are added to the other 7. So we have 10 soft cover publications available on the website. So you can purchase those. They all range between $8 and $11. We also, of course, have the distributor piece for people who want to distribute our publications and make money themselves as an entrepreneur, but also distribute the information. That all 10 publications we use as part of the process. But if you want to, if you support the information that we're giving out and we're putting out, support the work that we're doing, the free lectures in different cities, services and so forth, substance abuse abstinence and the various services we offer and the free lectures and teaching and the free PDF books, please go and purchase the soft cover versions, or you can make a donation, but we'll still send your book anyway to assist what we're trying to do. We're raising funds to cover the expenses for these upcoming trips in different cities, because we don't charge people to attend our lectures and so forth. So if anybody was planning to make a purchase of a book, please do so today. We're trying to get some funds up for the next couple of events that we will be doing. We have an event coming up in on August 9th in Philly, and also August 16th in Las Vegas, and some more are coming up. But we want to have books. We always give away a free copy of one of our books to everybody who attends the event, just so we can get that information out and so people can study that information. Even if they don't have money to purchase a book, at least one of the books that we're speaking on, we give away that free copy. We sell the other 9. So we're trying to, you know, generate funds to print out these books. We print them ourselves in-house, in color, on our own printers. So, of course, that's a great expense. And we, you know, we're trying to generate those funds to do that. So please support us through that process. Now, we also have some, if you have any questions online, I'm sorry, on the phone, you can just raise your hand, press number 1. And let's see, I just want to make sure. Okay, and the event that we mentioned on August 9th in Philadelphia, that's actually, we were invited to speak as a keynote speaker at that event, which we are honored to do. What we have, it's actually an all-day festival, the the Sankofa Festival, the Philadelphia Sankofa Festival. It's from 12 o'clock to 6 p.m. all day on Saturday. Somewhere in the middle of the festival, more than likely, is when we will have our presentation. We plan to have all of our 10 books there, selling those books, but of course, again, this is why we're putting that information out there for those who want to purchase, because we want to have as many books as possible. And when you purchase the book, then we can print out more, because we would like to have those books there at the event as well, as well as the event the following week in Las Vegas. And we're still raising our fundraiser that we mentioned last week. That fundraiser is still on, because we want to cover the expenses for the Las Vegas trip. Somebody just mentioned, please add Hawaii to your future travels, which we do want to go there as well. We've had people ask about Florida, California this week recently, a couple of days ago about California, Florida, Arizona, Texas. Somebody asked about Texas this week as well. So the various places that we, you know, people want us to come to, we would like to fund those trips ourselves, so we don't place an undue burden on, you know, people in various, you know, locales. So again, if you'd like to make a donation, you can go to the same NHOMA page. If you'd like to, you know, purchase a book or more than one book or become a distributor, you can go to the NHOMA page, www.ojidafo.com/NHOMA.html. Okay. So that's the information that we wanted to cover today with regard to the differences between Supreme Being and the Creator and Creatress, and just the cosmology as manifested in the region today called Kemenu, or the region of the eight, with these eight primordial divinities headed up by Amen and Amenet, showing that they are different divinities. They're not just symbols. They're not just, quote-unquote, you know, anthropomorphizing of Ashe and nonsense like that. These are actual divinities. We invoke Amen. We invoke Amenet. We invoke Ka and Kayat. We invoke Hehu and Hehu. We invoke Nun and Nunet. Of course, we invoke Ra and Riot and the various other divinities. These are forces in nature that work with us. They possess just like other divinities possess, of course, except for Amen and Amenet, who permeate all things. But the other divinities, they are Orisha, they are Vodou, they are, you know, Abosom, and so forth. So we just want to clarify that. So when people go and do further study and specifically when you begin to engage the ritual process, you will have this, you know, foundational information. There's a great deal of misinformation repeated by many quote-unquote comedic groups, people who have studied under people from the continent. And all you have to do is whenever somebody gives you information, publishes information or teaches information, all you have to do is ask them, where did you get that from? Show me where you got it from. And you can easily, you know, find out, you know, what's the basis of what they're doing. Some people will talk about things written. Some things will talk about, people will talk about information that was taught to them by certain individuals. But then the question is, who are these individuals and where did they get their information from? We can knock out a great deal of misinformation simply by doing that. The so-called comedic groups and other groups that are out here talking about pseudo-metaphysics and misinformation about the occult and pseudo-esoteric teachings and things like that, which is all misinformation, but all you have to do is investigate, and it will be traced directly back, and you'll be able to find evidence very easily as traced directly back to the corruption of our culture by the whites and their offspring when they invaded Kemet. Very simple. Those people who are infected with misinformation on the continent and they pass it on to our people here, your crop will tell you whether or not something is accurate, inaccurate, or accurate. And then you investigate. The primary institution of learning is your ancestral tribe. That's your university. It allows you to, you know, get information directly from the real mistresses of culture. Our ancestresses and ancestors are Nananoma and Samafo, those who are spiritually cultivated. they have that information. They can give that information, this, you know, detailed information. They live the culture. They created the culture. And so, therefore, they can give that information to us. Of course, we have an ancestral memory of having been part of the culture. It's encoded within your crop. So when you confront somebody who's, quote-unquote, involved in the culture, was born into the culture, and tells you, and they give you misinformation, your crop will reject it right away. In your head, you will feel this misinformation. You go to your insumanfo, they will tell you that's misinformation. Then you can, if anything that someone tells you does not comport with what your own insumanfo, your own kra tells you, then you reject that individual. It doesn't matter how many years they've been initiated, how many languages they speak, all of that is absolutely immaterial and unimportant. If they're not telling the truth, then they're not telling the truth, whether they're doing it deliberately or because they were misinformed themselves. So the key is what's in your crop. That's the key to all everything. Now, hold on 1 second. We just want to check to see, I saw a couple of comments here. Okay, so you said, is it cool for you to personally use a veve or the loa that rules your head, or not necessary, or a bad idea, or what? First of all, you would investigate what is the veve, where does the symbolism come from, is it an authentic symbol, or is it not an authentic symbol? The key, again, is always dealing with your crop. Authentic symbols, like an authentic veve, just like we were saying about the abosom, we're very often possessing and draw something in the dirt, draw something in the sand, take something from us and draw something with it and show us a specific symbol that's sacred to them and will tell us to use it, and we will take that symbol and we'll draw it ourselves and put it on the shrine, and every time we invoke them we'll utilize that symbol or whatever. Those are real veve. There's a such thing as real veve. There's a such thing as those that are, you know, were just something that somebody used, manufactured. So before you use anything, any kind of device or any kind of approach, you clear that with your insumanfo. That's why it's key to develop a relationship with your great-great-great-great-great grandparents who are honorable, your ancestresses and ancestors who are spiritually cultivated. You develop a working relationship with them, going to the shrine on a consistent basis. The more you deal with them, the more information you will receive from them. And you'll know whether or not, when you start thinking about, oh, maybe I should use a veve or whatever, they'll let you know if you should, and if you should, which one you should use. When you communicate with the abosom that governs your head, you're specifically the abosom of your head, not the, there's a difference between your kra, which is a deity itself, your head itself, and then a deity that influences that. So you can have a kra, an ori, that's your personal divinity. You may have Oshun that governs your kra. So the kind of kra you have is influenced by Oshun, as opposed to the kind of kra somebody else has is influenced by somebody else. So it's similar to the fact that you have two parents, but then both of them have parents, which are your grandparents, but your direct, the people whose womb and loins you came out of were your parents. That's like your crop. Those people who you came directly out of, they are influenced by their parents. That's like the deities that, quote-unquote, govern somebody's head. When they say it's a deity that governs the head, that kind of sounds, speaking English, it can be confusing to people. If they said it more properly, yes, you could have the deity that governs your head, but it's better to say the deity that rules my ori or my okra, because when you say it like that, then you're saying there are actually two deities now. Your okra is a deity, and it's influenced by another divinity like Oshun, Ogun, Obatala, and so forth. Your head or your ori or your okra is a deity in and of itself. So you communicate with your kra. We have shrines just for the kra. We sit down and communicate with our kra at the shrine for the kra, or the shrine for the ori, the Ibori shrine, the shrine for the se, or selido. In Ibo, this is called the chi, the shrine for the chi. So you communicate with your crop on a consistent basis to learn specific things about what you should do, how you should function, what your destiny is, your thoughts, intentions, and actions if they're in harmony with that function. You also communicate with your ancestors and ancestors at their own shrine, which is separate from the shrine for the crop, periodically, just like you visit your grandparents periodically, you go over their house, or they come over your house periodically. They're not there every single day, all day long, but you visit them for guidance, for direction, for experience. Periodically, you go to your Nsamapo. Some people will deal with the Nsamapo every single day. Some on a every other day. It just depends on the schedule you use with them. But that's separate from you connecting with your Kra, your head divinity, on a daily basis. So when you deal with your Kra and you deal with your Nsamapo on a consistent basis, you will develop that kind of communication where they will direct you towards activities and keep you away from activities. So even if you start thinking about, I want to use a veve, if you should, they will move you towards that. If you shouldn't, you will have a strong rejection, negative rejection towards it. Even if you don't know the details why yet, you just know that you should not do that. And the more you communicate with them, the more they will give you that information in detail. Okay, and we had another question. It looks like, Yeni Aseda. Okay, so what is the difference between the 42 laws of Maat and the 77 laws from the quote-unquote Earth Center? Okay, so the key thing, again, of the 42, what they would call laws, the enunciations of Maat, the key is you're dealing with 42 deities that you're invoking on a consistent basis. Now, there are some groups on the continent, and what he did basically with the 77 laws, he took the 42, and then he found some other admonitions, basically. What he did was you find some other things in the Runu Pert Imheru. You find other, in fact, prior to the way they list them, when they're talking about the actual divinities, the 42 divinities, there's a list prior to that when the person is talking about what they have not done and so forth. What he did was he combined them all, and then he put them up into 77, and then he put them out. The reason why he put them out there like that, it's because he decided to make it into 77. The reason why he did it like that is because there are certain groups on the continent that 70 and 7 and 77 is a sacred number. And for example, in the Akan tradition amongst the Asante, you have the 77 laws of Okonkwo Anoche. And that also exists in different, you know, groups. So he knew about that 77 piece, and it's connected to 77 divinities or whatever. He knew about that, and what he did was he took the 42, quote-unquote, laws of Maat. He found 30-plus other ones, and he combined them, made it to 77, and pretended as though, you know, he had been utilizing this all along. But he really cobbled them together. And I know that because I had actually interacted with him. This is the person who started the Earth Center. He made his transition a number of years ago. But I happen to know that because I actually interacted with him for a few weeks, helping with their little journal a number of years ago. And when he talks about all the information he learned from Bush, from Africa, and all this other stuff, there were things he didn't even know about the Medutu, and he had me looking through books trying to find the correct spelling of the name of a deity because he didn't know the spelling, he didn't remember the spelling. He was going through a bunch of hieroglyphic books trying to find out the spelling of the name of that deity because he didn't know it. Now, the way he would talk to people is, hey, I've learned all this information directly from initiation in the bush, amongst the, you know, in Burkina Faso and amongst the, you know, Goromanche people, and then later he started saying he was Dogon and stuff like that. But in reality, studying these books, he learned a few things from his people, but he was reading a bunch of books, hieroglyphic books and things like that, and, you know, putting the information out as though, you know, everything he learned came directly from the continent. Now, if somebody's involved in real culture from the continent or from here, but who are connected to the Abosom for real, excuse me, or the Orisha for real, because, you know, we are born with them, you can learn all that information directly from the Abosom and directly from the Nsamafa. He was just an individual who was lying about it and promoting that idea that he was really doing that, which he really was not. That's why he had crackers and married to a cracker, had crackers involved in the organization and all that other nonsense. And misinformation about cosmology and various other things. Okay. So, check the phone line real quick. So, all right, if there are no other questions, we will be on tomorrow for Egua Marketplace. Our guest will be Sister Kentake, who has the business Akoma Ntoaso Tours and Products. They're sponsoring a tour to Jamaica coming up very soon, a tour based on, from an Afuraikani perspective, a cultural tour, so you won't, it's not just the average, you know, tourist attraction, dealing with a cultural perspective, a cultural tour of Jamaica. Of course, in Jamaica, they have the Maroons, people continue to practice ancestral culture, ancestral religion, and so forth. Of course, there's a lot of culture there as long as you connect with the right people. So she'll be talking about that tour. Of course, there's still room for people to join that tour, sign up, and go on the tour to Jamaica with the organization. So she's going to be going in on that. So that's tomorrow at 9 p.m. on the channel, of course. And then every week we're going to have a different guest. Same day, Egua Awukuda Wednesday. And then, of course, on Benada Tuesday, we have Ojira, and we'll be dealing with different aspects of ancestral religion and culture. So nobody on the phone line has a question. I think that's – okay, it looks like one more question in the chat. How do you know if you still have an ordinary for sure? So the first thing we always suggest people do is first establish the Nkombre, the shrine, to the Nananom Nsamafo, the ancestresses and ancestors. Your spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors, because they're the ones who you will learn directly from. And they are the ones who will confirm the various things that have been, you know, taught, bits of information you get from here and there that may be accurate in some areas, and some places you get information is inaccurate. They can pull those things together, remind you of the experiences you had living in Afuraka, Afuraikai. It also helps you to begin to align with your Kra as well, because they will only tell you things that are in harmony with and that comport with your Kra. So that's the first thing. And as you engage that process, then you will start strengthening your relationship with your Kra as well, and you can establish a separate shrine to your Kra, which is very, very simple. It's basically a space, a bowl of water to cleanse your Kra, and ritually, you know, a ritual prayer. It's very, very simple, very portable, nothing elaborate. So, and we talk about that in the book. In fact, let me put the link up. But that information is detailed in the book, the Okra complex, which is the same as Ori in Europe, but it's just the Okra and the Akan tradition. The Okra complex is Solo Bakampo. So people can go to that link. You can get to that through the Nhoma page on the website, the publications page on the website. You can download the free version, and of course you can also order the soft cover version. But the whole book is about the Ori, about the Kra, and we give the various details about that and its relationship to the ancestresses and ancestors and the other divinity and the supreme being. Amen, Amenet, Kankite, and so forth. Okay, all right. So brother said sometimes you get overwhelmed with reading, you forget which one to read. So, in fact, on the index page of our website, of course, we list the different things that we have, products and services, but we also have a self-study curriculum where we list the different books in order step-by-step for somebody who's just starting out, starting with the Kukutuntun, the Ancestral Jurisdiction, then the Uben Shang, the Ancestral Summons, and then Wabo Jida, Patan Samain, Atemu, and then Nana Som and Homa. So step-by-step information, you start off reading this and listening to that, Kukutuntun, then go to the Uben Shang, then so step-by-step you get introduced to information, foundational information about cosmology, culture, the Supreme Being, the ancestresses and ancestors, the deities, our Ka and Kaed, the relationship, the fictional characters of the Bible, Quran, Talmud, all those fictional characters we prove didn't exist. Then you get into the Uben Shang ritual practices and their validity and their functionality, Wabo Jida. So we go step by step. Then you get to the point dealing with the ancestral shrines. Then you get to the point dealing with the Okra and so forth. So it's a step-by-step process for people to engage in the self-study curriculum from the beginning. That's just a guide that we put out there to help people navigate their way through the work. Sometimes, and we did that because sometimes people go to the site and they will see some of the new publications that we released, and it'll say just released or a new publication or recent publications, and they may jump to that first, but they didn't get that foundational information first. And because we have over 60 articles and 15 books now, and like 49 videos, people wouldn't know where to start because there's so much information. You could read, you know, something every day for the next, you know, you could read 60 articles a day for the next 60 days, or you could read it, get a book every day for the next 15 days, or you could listen to a two-hour video. There are 48 of them, so for the next 48 days, you could listen to something different every day. So it's hard. Sometimes it would be hard for people to know where to start. So that's why we have that self-study curriculum on the index page of the Ojirafo site. All right. So, okay, so we're going to end it here. Medase, thank you for everybody tuning in. Please tune in tomorrow to listen to Sister Kentake. She's going to have some great information. But she's a cultural warrioress, very committed to the culture. Just in general, Akoma Ntuwaso tours and products is just one of the initiatives that she has. She also does homeschooling and teaching, just various things, many, many things. So that's going to be a great interview. Of course, she practices ancestral religion as well, so we'll talk about that as well. So please tune in tomorrow at 9 p.m. for that. This show's archive will be up probably within 15 minutes of the end of the show, and you'll be able to tune into that, as well as all of the archives. We've been doing weekly shows twice a week since the end of May. So all of those shows, you can go to our Blog Talk site, and you can download and listen to those, anyone that you missed. Anytime, you can download them as well yourself. So you can listen to them on the site as well as download them to your computer if you want to. You can also share them on Facebook, share the link on Facebook, share it on your social media networks. And again, just once again, for the other people who also came in late, we are still having our fundraiser to generate funds for our upcoming presentations, giveaways of free books. Doing presentations in different cities, we don't charge people for attending or people for organizing them. We don't charge a speaker's fee, so the expenses are primarily on us to generate those funds. And because we give away all of our books for free online, the PDF version, all 15 books, all 60 articles, but then the soft cover versions of 10 of the books we have available, we do sell those, and that helps us with all of our expenses. So, for those who are interested in either purchasing a book or making a donation, and any donation, it can be $5, $10, whatever it is, any donation, $15 or more, we will send you a soft cover book, one of our books. Just let us know which one you want. And you can do that at our student home op page, ojrafo.com/nhoma.html. And again, may I say for tuning in, and we will connect with everyone tomorrow. That's it.